Tunisia's biggest political party, Ennahda, calls for national dialogue to get a country out of a crisis sparked by a president's dismissal of the government and parliament. An Algerian judo athlete who quit match against an Israeli opponent at the Olympics in solidarity with Palestinians. Indonesia registers 2,000 coronavirus deaths in a new daily record. It also reports more than 45,000 new cases. This is World News. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Starting up with Tunisia, the biggest political party there, Ennahda, is calling for dialogue to get the country out of the crisis that's created by the president's dismissal of the government and parliament. The party urges unity among the people and rejects calls for internal strife. That a day after supporters and opponents of President Kais Saied clashed outside parliament, leaving several people injured. People took to the streets following a call by the parliament speaker, Rashid Ghannouchi, who was infuriated over the president's decision. Saied has, however, rejected the criticism, calling his move constitutional. On Sunday, Saied dismissed Prime Minister Hichem Mechichi as well as suspended the parliament for a month. The decision followed violent protests across the North African nation over the government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic and the ailing economy. Let's take a look at Lebanon now. Najib Meghati is set to begin his bid to form a government there, and that a day after he was designated as the new prime minister. Meghati is due to hold consultations with leading political parties to form the long-awaited government. That marks the third such attempt by a politician in a year. Last week, Prime Minister-designate Saad Hariri failed to form a cabinet and stepped down. He cited differences with President Michel Aoun. Lebanon has been run by a caretaker administration since August last year. And that's when the government resigned in the aftermath of a devastating explosion in the Beirut port. The political vacuum has fueled Lebanon's financial crisis. Meghati has pledged reforms and transparency. The Iranian parliament speaker has arrived in Syria on an official visit. Mohammad Barghalibaf's trip will mostly focus on trade and economic cooperation. We're joined by a correspondent in Damascus a short while ago for more on that.
Mr. Ghalibaf arrived at Damascus International Airport just a while ago. He was received by his Syrian counterpart, Hamoud al-Sabbah, over there. Mr. Ghalibaf is expected to stay in Syria for 2 days. His official meetings are expected to start tomorrow. He is probably going to meet Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. What is confirmed is that he will be holding an official meeting with his Syrian counterpart, Hamoud al-Sabbah, at the People's Assembly here in the Syrian capital, Damascus. And then he will be also meeting at the evening with Syria-based Palestinian factions. Mr. Ghalibaf stressed that his visit is very important to develop relations between Syria and Iran, and to, particularly in the economic sector, especially now as the reconstruction perhaps process is starting in Syria after the Syrian government, the Syrian army was able to regain control of most parts of the country. He also said upon his arrival at Damascus International Airport, Mr. Ghalibaf, that Syria is a very important country in the resistance front, in the resistance alliance in the region, and he stressed the importance of economic cooperation between both countries, and perhaps this will be the most important topic that we'll be discussing with the Syrian officials. Of course, this is just one of many visits carried out by Iranian officials to Syria and also by many Syrian officials to Iran, which also always reflects the strength of relations between both countries. Especially, it's a message, according to many analysts, to all of the enemies of this resistance alliance that those two countries will remain strong with their alliance, will remain allied, and will remain supporting each other.
Well, Iran says it has arrested a group of people working for the Israeli spy agency Mossad in the country's west. The Ministry of Intelligence said the arrests were made following a precise monitoring and gathering of information from outside the country and on the back of efforts of the intelligence personnel. It says a huge cache of arms and weapons were also seized from the group. that was entering from the country's western borders. Aziz's equipment were planned to be used to incite unrest and other terrorist activities in Iran. The Israeli spy agency had planned to carry out sabotage activities during the recently held elections, but the ministry's timely counter-operations hampered the plots, dealing a heavy blow to the Israeli Mossad agency. The displaced residents of a region of Afghanistan's Ghazni province say that the Taliban militants shot and killed tens of civilians in their latest attack on that region. Our correspondent Amin Alami has talked to the displaced residents and filed a report.
These people have been displaced from their homes after Taliban captured the Shia-dominated district of Malistan in central Ghazni province. They say the Taliban committed war crimes by killing tens of civilians.
We were in the region during the first two nights of the Taliban attack, but were forced to leave our homes. The Taliban forced us to provide them with food and drink. They also killed about 40 innocent civilians.
The recent Taliban advances across Afghanistan have brought heavy consequences for local Afghans, especially those who live in remote districts and villages. The Malistan in west of Ghazni province is one among attacked regions by the Taliban over the past weeks. Taliban has dismissed any report on killing of civilians in the Malistan region. Fighting between the Taliban and Afghan government forces has increased over the past months as foreign troops leave the country. The Taliban has made rapid gains, retaking border crossings in rural areas. The government has stepped up operations to push back the militants. Figures show that at least 3,000 people have been displaced from Malistan district over the last 10 days following Taliban attacks there. Displaced residents say government forces did not resist those attacks as they had expected. This, as Afghan officials have repeatedly claimed that troops were tactically retreated from dozens of districts, including Malistan. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
An Algerian judo athlete who quit the Tokyo Olympics to avoid playing an Israeli opponent has spoken to Press TV explosively, explaining why he felt he had no choice except to walk from his great chance to win the gold. Palestine is just too important for this Algerian who prioritizes their cause even over his own sporting ambitions. Robert Carter reports.
An Algerian judoka athlete who made headlines last week for shunning an Israeli opponent at the Tokyo Olympics has now been temporarily suspended along with his coach from the International Judo Federation, meaning that Fethi Nurin will not be able to compete after making his bold statement in support of Palestine. After returning to Algeria, V secured an exclusive interview with Nurin to ask why he felt he had to walk.
I was pitted to play against an athlete from the usurper entity occupying Palestinian land, a regime which kills innocent people and drives them out of their homes, day and night. Because of this, I don't accept that my hand is smeared with someone who represents an entity like this, and for his flag to be associated with the Algerian flag, which is in support of the Palestinians' cause.
His actions meant he would miss out on a chance to win a medal, but Nurin admitted he had no regrets.
If the same situation arises, I would not hesitate to take the same decision. The world needs to know that Israel is an occupier and they practice all kinds of laws that deviate from the international laws and human rights. We need to send a message to the world that we deal with all religions with dignity, just as the Islamic religion recommended us to do. Except for the ones who fight against the religion and the Muslims. We are against them and it's our rights to respond to them. We have the right to defend our religion and all oppressed Muslims.
The Olympic Charter takes a strong stance against any political acts, stating that no kind of demonstration or political, religious or racial propaganda is permitted.
However, this isn't the first time that a Muslim athlete has protested against this controversial lineup. Many are now starting to ask questions about the Olympics and their lack of sensitivity on the subject. Also, are the games being used to whitewash Israel at a time when Palestinians remain deeply oppressed? Robert Carter, London.
Israeli warplanes have launched a series of raids on targets in the Gaza Strip. Israel says that the air raids came in response to recent launching of incendiary balloons from Gaza. Palestinians view firing at the balloons as a form of defending their rights. Ruba Shabbat has the story.
Israeli warplanes carried out airstrikes early Monday on positions in the Gaza Strip in response to incendiary balloons fired from Gaza. Palestinians say these balloons are a means to pressure the Israeli regime to respond to their demands and lift the siege imposed for 15 years, deteriorating the life of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
Israeli airstrikes are part of efforts by Israel to undermine the Palestinian resilience and increase the suffering of Palestinians. These airstrikes show the weak position of the Israeli army. The Israeli regime is linking the reconstruction in Gaza to political issues, including the fate of its soldiers in Gaza, and we won't accept this. The ongoing blockade and restrictions will lead to serious consequences, and the resistance won't remain silent.
Among the demands, Palestinians call for the import of building materials required for the reconstruction of Gaza and the Qatari grant. Israel refuses all the Palestinian demands and links the reconstruction process in Gaza to political issues.
The Israeli regime has stopped the import of the required construction materials needed for factories that were damaged during the latest escalation. This has led to paralyzing the economy of Gaza. The Israeli regime thinks these attempts will break their willingness, but Palestinians will always support the resistance as the only means to defend their rights.
According to the Israeli army statement, the airstrike over Gaza won't stop as long as Palestinians keep firing incendiary balloons. Palestinian resistance expressed it's ready for all scenarios, including renewed fighting in the face of the Israeli inhuman acts.
The Israeli airstrikes revealed the true nature of the tension between Israeli regime and the Palestinian factions. There are many issues that need to be resolved, including reconstruction of Gaza. If Israeli regime keeps ignoring the Palestinian demands, we won't sit idle.
Palestinians here say the Israeli airstrike is an attempt to put pressure on resistant groups to give up on their demands. Palestinians also stress they will keep firing incendiary balloons until Israel lifts its crippling blockade and end restrictions imposed on the reconstruction of the war-ravaged Gaza. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
A total of 14 Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails have gone on hunger strike in protest at their illegal detention. Mona Kendall reports from the West Bank.
10 months ago, Israeli forces arrested Palestinian football player Jivara Namura and held him behind bars without charge or trial under what's known as administrative detention, deemed illegal based on international law. 3 months later, his pregnant wife gave birth to their first child, a daughter named Julia. This month, his administrative detention order was supposed to end. However, the Israeli regime extended his illegal detention. Almost 2 weeks ago, Jivara started an open-ended hunger strike, protesting his illegal detention and hoping to see and cuddle his seven-month-old Julia.
After 3 months of Guevara detention, I gave birth to Julia. This is our first child, so can you imagine how hard his imprisonment is for all of us? It's even harder because there is no charge against him, and his detention is being renewed. It's not easy neither for him nor me and Julia. We have the right to live a normal life.
Guevara is not alone. At least 14 other Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails are on hunger strike in protest of their unfair administrative detention without charge or trial. The Prisoners' Affairs Commission revealed that Israeli prison authorities maltreated the hunger-striking detainees and had moved them to solitary confinement to force them in their protest. Israel uses the so-called administrative detention policy to arrest and hold Palestinians without filing formal charges. Tel Aviv insists that they were arrested on secret reports which are inaccessible to prisoners and their lawyers. Human rights groups say Israel should either prosecute those prisoners or release them, especially that the detention orders can be renewed indefinitely, and the detainees could even stay in prison up to 10 years.
Israeli occupation regime continues to use this aggressive policy regardless of the global demands to end using it. That's why we believe that the hunger strikes are important, but they could not force Israel to stop using this policy.
Israel holds some 5,000 Palestinians in its jails, including hundreds who are held behind bars without any charge or trial. For the Palestinian prisoners, the hunger strike is an attempt to expose Israel's illegal policy of administrative detention that must come to an end. Israel, however, continues to be intransigent in dealing with the hunger strikers' legal demands to make sure that no more prisoners would follow the same path in the future. Mona Kandil, in front of Awfer Jail, west of occupied Ramallah.
In other news, Indonesia has registered 2,000 new COVID deaths, marking a new daily record since the beginning of the pandemic in early 2020. Health officials also reported 45,000 new infections, bringing the caseload to 3.2 million. Now, this after the country this week loosened virus curves by allowing small businesses to reopen after a three-week partial lockdown. Indonesia has registered more new COVID cases than any nation in the world this month, and that's due to the spread of the Delta strain. The Southeast Asian country has reported a total of nearly 87,000 deaths. Vaccination levels also remain low. Less than 7% of the 270 million population has been fully inoculated. The Japanese capital has registered a record number of coronavirus infections amid the ongoing 2020 Summer Olympic Games. Tokyo reported 2,900 cases, almost double the number a day before. Hospitals in the city have been overwhelmed by the fifth wave of the pandemic that's fueled by Delta variant. Tokyo and its surrounding areas are already under a fourth state of emergency, which will run until after the Games. The Japanese Prime Minister has ruled out suspending the Olympics despite widespread calls from both inside and outside to cancel the event amid fears it may turn into a super spreader. Despite tight restrictions, 155 cases have so far emerged involving athletes and others. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به حق تعالی.
In the path of the Imam.
Dear listeners, we're going to continue our discussion of the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini's testament. In today's program, we're going to discuss another part of the Imam's testament where he exposes the enemy's plots for forging rift between universities and seminaries. Please stay with us. Seminaries have a long history in Iran, while modern universities are considered new institutions. Although the older form of academic education dates back to over 1,000 years in Iran. This is proved by the Jundi Shapur University in Khuzestan province, which dates back to the Sassanid era. The first modern university was founded in Iran in 1934, and by the name of Tehran University. However, seminaries date back to the first Islamic centuries. Seminaries have shouldered the responsibility of educating Iranian teenagers and young people before the entry of university to the country. As a result of Western propaganda, seminaries are considered as a center of religious teaching with no link to rationality and rational education. But with the entry of faithful and devoted students into universities in the 1950s, gradually there emerged congruity and convergence between these two educational institutions. Alongside the formation and reinforcement of the despotic climate in the country and further assistance between university and seminary students, the political ruling system was more and more criticized by both centers. Imam Khomeini's high emphasis on necessity of cooperation between universities and seminaries broke the negative mentality among the members of the two centers and society at large. Furthermore, the presentation of new political and revolutionary ideas by him strengthened his base among academics. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, believed that unity between universities and seminaries would lead to the victory of the Islamic Revolution. After the triumph of the Islamic Revolution too, he considered this cooperation and unity very effective for the growth and bolstering of the Islamic Republic system of government. In view of this, he wrote in his testament, "Among the devilish schemes of the big colonial and imperial powers or exploitative powers that have been implemented for many years and has reached its climax since the era of Reza Khan and pursued by Muhammad Reza I, different ways is to isolate the clergy. In the era of Reza Khan, it was pursued through pressure, through suppression, defrocking, imprisonment, exile, disrespect, execution, and so on. And in the era of Muhammad Reza, it was pursued by scheme and other ways, one of which was forging hostility between academic and clergyman, which with propaganda was carried out in this field. Unfortunately, due to the unawareness of both strata about this devilish plot of superpowers, it yielded greatly. On the one hand, from schools to universities, it was tried to appoint the teachers, professors, and university chancellors from among Western educated individuals, and those who were deviated from Islam and belonged to other religions, and the committed faithful were placed in a minority in order to train effective stratum, which would take the rule in future from childhood to adolescence up to youth in a way that would hate religion in general and Islam in particular, and that they would hate clergymen. And at the same time, these were introduced by Britain and later on by the advocates of capitalism and feudalists and supporters of backwardness and opponents of civilization and sublimity. On the other hand, this wicked propaganda, they would frighten clergymen, promoters and devotees of universities and academics, and would accuse them of not respecting religion, promiscuity, and opposition to the symbols of Islam and religion. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, further wrote in his testament, "The result of those policies is that politicians and statesmen were opposed to religion, Islam and clergymen, and the faithful. Whereas, the masses of people who liked religion and clergymen were opposed to the government and the ruling system and whatever belonged to it. And the deep differences between the government and nation and academic and clergymen opened the way for looters to the extent that all affairs of the country were in their power and all reserves of the nation were poured into their pockets, so that you saw what happened and what was going to happen to this oppressed nation. Now, with the grace of God and the struggle of the nation, from clergymen to academics and to ordinary people, workers, farmers and other strata of society have torn up the chains of captivity and broken the dam of the power of superpowers, and rescued the country from them and their lackeys. My advice to the present and the future generation is that they should not neglect this history, and that the academics and the courageous young people and clergymen and students of Islamic sciences consolidate the bond of friendship as much as possible between the seminaries and the universities. And never be negligent of the plots and schemes and conspiracies of the deceitful enemy. And as soon as they see a person or persons who try with their words or deeds to sow differences between the seminary and the university, to guide and advise them. And if it is not effective, leave him alone and isolate him so that they do not let the conspiracy to take root."
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, أو you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Understanding Ghadir properly, brothers and sisters, Allah is a witness. Today, upholding Ghadir is upholding the person that has got the right to rule based on what the Ahlul Bayt have said. Upholding Ghadir means supporting the one who has that authority today, not the one who is unseen, not the one that when he comes we will receive his orders directly. The ones that he has said, the 12th Imam have said, in my absence, these are the people that have wilaya. It is our responsibility to identify the ones that the Imam of our time has mentioned as the wali over us during this time, accept that and support that and support none other than that. This is our responsibility. Every single one of us. And it has nothing to do with ethnicity. It has nothing to do with nationality. It has nothing to do with any of these. No borders, no none of that. The same way that when the Imam of our time, Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif, comes, initially his rule will cover a certain part of the earth. The rest of the earth, the rest of the people are going to still have these tawaghit that are not going to give in to his rule. So if you live under those tawaghit, what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to support your tawhut? Or are you supposed to say, no, I only support my imam? In the same way today, wilayah of the ulama with the conditions that are there, which we have in Ayatollah al-Uzma Khamenei, the same way that the believers in Lebanon understand this, the believers in other countries understand this, we should all understand this. This is the wilayah that today manifests in these people based on the saying of the Ahlul Bayt. Our responsibility is to uphold wilayah in finding the correct person, the right person, the one that the imams have told us, and taking their wilayah, none other, and supporting that. It is all of our responsibilities, regardless of ethnicity, nationality, whatever else is out there, to support the wilayah of this alim that is muttaqi, that has insight, that is fulfilling the role of the wilayah of the Ahlul Bayt. With all the respect to all the other ulama. All other ulama need respect, and we respect them all. Maraja and other than maraja. We have maraja in fiqh. May Allah bless them, prolong their lives, and so on and so forth. We have ulama of theology. May Allah bless them. Ulama of philosophy. May Allah bless them. Ulama of hadith. May Allah bless them. Ulama of tafsir. May Allah bless them. Ulama of irfan. May Allah bless them. All of these ulama are great, and we go to them for... Wilaya is different. Wilaya is different. There's one who has wilaya at this time. It is our job to support that. Supporting the wilaya of Ayatollah Khamenei is supporting the wilaya of Islam, is supporting the wilaya of the 12th Imam. And not supporting it is not supporting the wilaya of the 12th Imam. In the same way that if we critique those incorrectly who identify as Shia, and they only accept a few of the imams. If you don't accept the seventh imam, you only go up to the sixth imam, it doesn't matter. If you don't accept the seventh imam, you're the same as not accepting Ali ibn Abi Talib either. There's no difference. If you go with the seventh imam, but then when it comes to the eighth imam, you don't accept him, you haven't accepted Ali ibn Abi Talib either. You say you do, but if you accepted Ali ibn Abi Talib, you have to accept the 8th Imam as well. If you say accept the 12 Imams, you accept the wilaya that they have given to those that they have given. If you don't, then you have not accepted the wilaya of the 12th Imam. He's saying that this is your governor. In my absence, these are the people you need to go to. You say, no, I don't want to. And today, brothers and sisters, the attack on wilaya is from all directions. Attack on wilaya is from all directions. The most painful of all is the attack on wilaya from those who identify as Shia, and they mention the 12th Imam, they mention the Ahlul Bayt, but they are the arch enemies of the visible wali of today, Ayatollah Khamenei. Arch enemies. What is most painful is that we who identify as Shi'atu Ali ibn Abi Talib. We identify ourselves as those who uphold Ghadir. We believe in the wilaya of Islam. We believe in the wilaya of the Ahlul Bayt. When the enemies of the kuffar against that wali today accuse that system, accuse, they say things against it, we tend the least bit, we tend to even think perhaps this is true, siding with the kuffar against the wali that we're supposed to be supporting. You're supposed to be supporting the wali. It's our responsibility to support the wali. The problem after Ghadir was people didn't support the wali at their time. Allah appointed, He explained, He showed. They didn't accept, they didn't support. Those who knew, there was a few that went against. The majority simply didn't support. If we don't support, what's the difference between us today and those people that we look down upon in history that didn't support the wilaya of Allah after the Prophet? The Prophet said, Ali. He said, no. The Imam of our time says, these people. We say, no. Inshallah, Allah, help us, Allah. It has become so difficult, brothers and sisters, this attack on wilaya, that even saying these words makes a person think, should I even say this? After it's clearer than the sun itself, after it's the evidence is overwhelming beyond imagination, and it's crystal clear for a person that this is what the Imam of our time has said and wanted, and right now he is supporting this man. He's the wali today. It is crystal clear to a person because of all the attacks on so many different levels within the Shia community that a person thinks twice before they would say something like that. Those who know it censor themselves. The same thing that happened after the demise of the Prophet. It's exactly what happened. They all knew. But because of the pressure, they just remained silent. They didn't do anything. Anyone today who silences themselves because somebody told them, well, you're not Iranian, this is an Iranian thing, that person is going to burn in hellfire unless Allah forgives them. This has nothing to do with being Iranian. The same way Ali ibn Abi Talib is Arab. How many of you are Arab? How does this have anything to do with being an Arab? If the Imam of our time sets up camp in Kufa, you're going to say he's in amongst Iraqis, he's in Iraq, he's with the Arabs? That logic should conclude that. That logic is in hellfire. For any excuse, no excuse. This is an Islamic teaching today. The one man that has the wilaya that the Ahlul Bayt have given him, and they have that right, Allah has given them that right to give it to someone, just like they did during the minor occultation, the four Nawab. Now it's this man. Now it's this man. He's the wali. You and I have got to support him. Those who don't understand this, ask Allah for clarity. Those who this is clear for them, at whatever level, and they silence themselves and censor themselves and do not support when they're supposed to support, they will have to answer to the Imam of our time as to why they were silent in support of the one he said needs to rule. And he said, needs to lead.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
With only about half of Americans vaccinated, Dr. Anthony Fauci and other current and former health officials vigorously pressed the case on Sunday, 25th of July, that inoculations were the best way to stem a tide of new COVID cases. Dr. Anthony S. Fauci warned on Sunday, 25th of July, that the coronavirus pandemic is now going in the wrong direction in the United States because too many Americans are still choosing not to get vaccinated. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Pam Bellock, Azzy Pabera, Danielle Slotnick, and Jesus Jimenez. The piece is titled, It's Not Going to Be Good. Fauci sounds alarm over low vaccination rates fueling COVID surge. Please stay with us for more. Only about half of Americans vaccinated, Dr. Anthony Fauci and other current and former health officials vigorously pressed the case on Sunday, 25th of July, that inoculations were the best way to stem a tide of new COVID cases. Dr. Anthony Fauci warned on Sunday that the coronavirus pandemic is now going in the wrong direction in the United States because too many Americans are still choosing not to get vaccinated. Asked on CNN's State of the Union program, about projections in recent statistical models that COVID-19 cases and deaths could surge in the coming months if vaccination rates don't increase, Dr. Fauci said it's not going to be good. With about half of Americans not yet vaccinated and the fast-spreading Delta variant of the coronavirus circulating, Dr. Fauci and a range of current and former health officials expressed exasperation at the situation on Sunday and vigorously pressed the case that vaccination is the best and most effective way to stem the tide of COVID cases. it is really a pandemic among the unvaccinated, Dr. Fauci said, adding, it's like you have two kinds of America. You have the very vulnerable unvaccinated part, and you have the really relatively protected vaccinated part. If you're vaccinated, you are in a very different category than someone who is not vaccinated. The situation is so dire that in recent days, even some Republican governors in low vaccination states have been pointedly exhorting people to get a COVID vaccine. On Sunday, 25th of July, on CNN, Governor Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas said, with a new school year on the horizon, this is a pivotal moment in our race against the COVID virus, adding that what's holding us back is a low vaccination rate. Governor Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas, a Republican, said he has been holding town hall recently, which he credited for a 40% increase in vaccination. Still, he added that certainly the resistance has hardened among some people. It's simply false information, he said. It's a myth. On CBS's Face the Nation, Dr. Jerome Adams, who was Surgeon General in the Trump administration, also encouraged vaccination, casting the decision in patriotic terms. Get vaccinated because it's going to help every single American enjoy the freedoms that we want to return to, he said. Dr. Jerome Adams said some people still have legitimate questions about getting vaccinated, including workers who worry post-vaccine side effects might cause them to miss a day's work or a paycheck. He predicted immunization rates would increase once the vaccines, currently available under emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, become fully licensed. That will likely prompt the military and some businesses to mandate vaccination for service members and employees, he said. In the meantime, Dr. Jerome Adams said the message should be, it is your choice, but choices come with consequences to you and to others, including children not yet old enough for vaccination and people who are medically vulnerable. Several current and former officials discussed whether recommendations or mandates for wearing face masks should be reinstated. Dr. Anthony Fauci said the Biden administration is considering reissuing stronger mask-wearing guidelines. In May, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention relaxed this guideline, saying that people who are fully vaccinated do not need to wear a face mask in most indoor settings. Dr. Jerome Adams said that guidance, quite frankly, has confused citizens. It's frustrated businesses and public health officials who I continue to hear from, and it's been, by any qualification, a failure. He said the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, should state clearly that even people who are vaccinated should wear face masks if they're in public, around people whose vaccination status is unclear, or in a community where COVID cases are increasing. The Center for Disease Control, the CDC, needs to give those businesses, those health officials, a little bit of cover by clarifying the guidance that they have out there, Dr. Jerome Adams said. Meanwhile, as a Delta variant of the coronavirus spreads through unvaccinated populations in the United States, many municipalities, colleges, and businesses are weighing not only whether to require vaccinations, but also whether to reimpose wearing of face masks indoors. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, the director of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, said on Thursday, 22nd of July, that her agency had no plans to change the guidance it issued back in May. That guidance allowed localities leeway to make their own rules, but said that people who were fully vaccinated could shed their face mask in most situations. Many Americans, vaccinated or not, did so with relief. Now the highly contagious Delta variant of the coronavirus and the fear of breakthrough infections, however mild they usually are, have led many individuals to consider covering their faces again. Nationally, new cases, hospitalizations and deaths remain far below their winter peaks, but there have been steep rises in both cases and hospitalizations in some less vaccinated areas. Vaccines are effective against the worst outcomes of COVID-19, including cases caused by the Delta variant of the coronavirus. But the pace of inoculations has decreased more than 80% since mid-April, and less than half of the population of the United States is fully vaccinated, according to federal data. As a result, some cities are turning to wearing face masks as an additional precaution. Los Angeles County in California, one of the first places to reinstate a mask mandate, requires face masks to be worn in public indoor spaces regardless of vaccination status. Also in St. Louis, Missouri, announced a similar mask mandate on Friday, 23rd of July.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Imam Khomeini guided the Iranian nation to determine their own fate, June 4, 2021. The televised speech delivered on June 4, 2021 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the 32nd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini. Greetings be upon him. in 1329 and 1330, according to the solar calendar, the years marked by the national movement, a certain movement came into being, bringing the people to the streets, thereby nationalizing Iran's oil and snatching it away from the English. However, 1-2 years later, an English and an American coup was launched, helping Mohammad Reza to resume another complex and very dangerous dictatorship for long periods of time. These incidents have taken place in the world. They were anticipating that fate for us by looking at the past. However, not only was the revolution and Imam Khomeini's system not dissolved, and not only did it not come to a halt, but it also became more powerful on a daily basis, refusing to surrender and to back off. It displayed and showcased its independence with each passing day. It accomplished great feats and overcame the obstacles. And they created so many obstacles on the way of this revolution and the system, all sorts, including political, economic, security, and various other obstacles. The Islamic Republic overcame all of them, and it galloped forward. Today, the Islamic Republic is more developed and advanced than when it first began work 40 years ago, and it is better in every aspect by God's favor and grace. Subhanallah, hamdan lillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah, hamdan lillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu Akbar. The secret to the survival of the Islamic Republic. Well, a question arises here about the secret to this survival and this progress. Why did the Islamic Republic not suffer the same fate as other political systems and revolutions despite all that enmity? What is the reason and what is the secret of this? I will tell you that the magnificent and pride-generating secret to the survival of this system could be summed up in two words, Republic and Islamic. The harmony between these two is the secret to the survival, and the organism that has been formed out of these two words should be protected, both the Republic and Islamic aspect of it, both the people and Islam. Republic means people, and Islamic means coming from Islam. This is the same as religious democracy.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.